and welcome to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. We're broadcasting this week once again. Again, you know, as I said. Again.
Very good. Are you taking diction lessons?
Dictionary.
Dictionary lessons?
We're broadcasting once again from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe here at Car Talk Plaza, where we have been assiduously planning this year's Dewey, Cheatham & Howe company picnic. Now, if you were listening last week...
Isn't that trees that have leaves that fall off in the winter?
Yeah, those are assiduous trees.
Assiduous trees.
You know that one lucky Car Talk listener is going to win an almost all-expense-paid trip for four to our fair city to attend this year's Dewey, Cheatham & Howe company picnic. And we'll tell you how to enter the contest later on in the show, so make sure you don't, you know, go to the bathroom. If you got to go, go now.
That's right, and get a pencil.
And take it with you.
Take it with you. That's right.
You know, speaking of our law firm, we've had a lot of law school students who write to us and say, gee, Tom and Ray, how can I get to be a lawyer for the prestigious firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe? What can I do to make myself a more attractive candidate? What do we tell them?
Plastic surgery.
No, we suggest that you go out for the track team. Now, if you've got a good time in the 100-yard dash, you've got a good shot at being a good ambulance chaser. Right?
Speaking of which, now, isn't this a coincidence? There you talk about ambulance chasing, and here I have on my part of the table here, I got a letter having to do with ambulance chasing from Arthur Milberger of Culver City, California. While thumbing through the March issue of the Pacific Flyer, I came across a piece of proposed legislation copy enclosed. Knowing the high esteem in which you hold the legal profession, I knew the best way to get this legislation enacted in every state was to send it to you for national dissemination among your vast radio audience. In order to avoid any legal problems, I sent a copy to your legal counsel, Dewey, Cheatham & Howe.
Of course, of course.
And their reply is also enclosed. And here's what it is. A bill to regulate the hunting and harvesting of attorneys. I won't read you this whole thing because I don't want to bore you, but there are a couple of items here. We, the public, believe that grave necessity requires the following emergency measures be immediately enacted by our legislation. 372.01. Any person with a valid Texas state rodent or armadillo hunting license may also legally hunt and harvest practicing attorneys for recreational and sporting, parenthesis, non-commercial purposes. 372.03. Here's the one. The willful killing of practicing attorneys with a motor vehicle is prohibited unless such vehicle is an ambulance being driven in reverse. Note that if this method is used, the bag limit may be inadvertently exceeded. No penalty shall be levied for a single incident. Dewey, Cheatham & Howe actually responded saying, dear gentleman and his brother, I have reviewed the proposed legislation sent to me by Arthur Milberger, one of your loyal listeners, who has nothing better to do but listen to you. Please be informed that should you take any action to promote, distribute, disseminate, or otherwise pass on this legislative drivel, I will have no choice other than to bring the wrath of the entire legal profession down on you.
Whoa. Sounds serious.
Louie is getting upset. This could include actions up to and including making NPR admit that they distribute your show. Oh, and most drastically, sending a note to your mother.
Oh, that would be pretty serious.
Also, please note that the firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe has been bought out by and is now a wholly owned subsidiary of the national legal franchise chain Torts R Us. Please include this information in the closing credits of your show. Signed, H. Lewis Dewey.
Can we take a call?
Yes, 1-800-332-9287. Hello.
Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi.
Hi, yeah. Who's this?
This is Sean. I'm from Hamtramck, Michigan.
Are you Scottish?
No, Sean.
Sean is an Irish name.
Yeah,
I made a mistake there. That was inexcusable.
Absolutely.
And I apologize.
So what's up, Sean?
Well, listen, I've got this 1975 Oldsmobile Delta 88 Royale convertible.
Whoa!
Yeah. A beautiful car, a classic automobile that I bought from a little old lady who said that it belonged to her husband, the sole owner.
Yeah.
And he parked it in the garage until he died.
Yeah.
And then she wanted to get rid of this car, so she sold it to me.
Whoa.
However...
Wait a minute. Did you take advantage of this little old lady?
No.
This widow?
Well, I did sort of...
Come on, how much did you pay for it?
She interviewed me. before she sold it.
She wanted to find out if you were worthy of driving her late husband's car.
When she left me, she said that she was very happy that I had taken the car.
Well, that's nice that she cared that much.
I believe her husband haunts this car.
You know why? Because you cheated her. You chiseled her on the price.
I don't think so.
How much? We'll be the judge of that. How much did you pay her?
I paid her $2,500 for this car.
Too much.
You stole it.
I was actually taken advantage of.
Yes, I think so. Well, it's worth $1,000.
No.
Well, how is her husband haunting the thing?
He gets in one of the wheels, I believe, somewhere, and rattles chains. There's this chain rattle that emanates from somewhere beneath the car.
Yeah.
When it gets above 20 miles an hour, and when I stop accelerating, when I let it coast, it begins to rattle. As I accelerate, I don't know whether it's just the engine noise itself that
covers it up,
or...
And you haven't looked. Have you sent out a search party for this noise?
We did. And as we were searching, we replaced one of the front discs for the brakes, and replaced the pads. And as we were replacing the pads, we found that one of the little clips that holds the pad onto the caliper was a little loose. And so we replaced the pad and the little clip.
That looked like the culprit, didn't it? You said, boy, this could really do it.
Yeah, and especially since the little disc itself was a little warped.
Yeah. Oh, it all sounds good.
If it had worked, you wouldn't be calling us.
And here I am.
Here you are.
You didn't look at the back wheels, did you?
Well, no. We looked at them and we decided good enough.
You didn't. In other words, you didn't take the hubcaps off. Is that true?
No, that's not true. We pulled off the wheels, looked at them, and thought good enough, because the little old lady that had taken advantage of me with this car said that they had done a brake job on this car and that it should be fine.
All the more reason to suspect the brakes. I mean, you can't tell if the noise is coming from the back or the front?
It sounds like the front. What I'd actually done is I'm a rollerblader, and we put down the top, and I sort of held on to the side and cruised along with my blades and sort of tried to listen.
Yeah.
It does sound like it's coming from the driver's side front, but it's really hard to tell.
So you clutched the side of this vehicle doing 20 miles an hour with the rollerblades on?
Yeah.
You're a nut.
No, 20 miles an hour isn't that fast with rollerblades.
Nice smooth road.
Yeah, if you can't tell whether it's the front or the back, it's probably the middle.
Ooh, very astute.
Ooh, good, huh?
You know, that's what scares me.
Yeah, it's probably the middle, and what it might be, how's this? This just came to me in a flash. It might be a baffle in the muffler.
You are very close. You're very close. What I believe.
You think you know?
Oh, I know what it is.
You do know.
Yeah, it's
pretty cocky, aren't you?
It's actually in the front, but the reason you can't tell is it's between the two wheels. It's the manifold heat control valve.
Ah, that's exactly what it is.
The what?
He's right.
Something
He's
called
right,
the heat
Sean.
Riser, or the manifold heat control valve, which is located between. It's at the very end of the manifold, just where the exhaust pipes attach. You can actually get this noise. Okay, without moving the car. If you rev up the engine to the right RPM, you can get it without the car being in motion. It doesn't require being in motion.
So you don't need the rollerblades.
You can wear them if you want. I mean, they make you taller and you're very comfortable on them.
But you can crawl underneath the car, make sure the brakes are on, and have someone rev it up, and you will find it.
Really?
You'll get the noise. It's like a click, 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 kind of noise.
That's it.
It's not this old man upset that I have his control.
No, he knows that his wife took advantage
Look,
of you.
First, there's two things. Don't rollerblade hanging on the car anymore. That's dangerous. And go back tomorrow morning and give the old lady an extra $1,000 that you fleeced her out of, and the noise will go away. You won't have to fix it.
I think it was bad karma.
I think so. Good luck, Sean.
Thank you very much.
All righty, bye-bye.
We'll be right back with the answer to the puzzler right after these messages.
Okay, look, it's finally time to answer the famous Monty Hall puzzler.
Oh, my God, I had forgotten all about that.
All right. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to restate the problem again.
Yeah.
It'll only take about 45, 50 minutes, and then if we have any time left...
Then we'll take a break and the show will be
I'll give the answer. Okay, you're on Let's Make a Deal. Everybody remembers this show, and if you don't, I'm going to describe it in all of its details, so it'll be embedded in your mind. So
it already is.
And on this show, you had an opportunity to win prizes, and one of the ways you would win prizes is by selecting one of three doors. Okay, there'd be three closed doors, and you'd select door number one, door number two, or door number three, and the lovely Carol Murrow would open the doors, and either you'd win a lifetime supply of Eskimo pies or some such thing, or a great prize, like a new car, right, new Chevy or something.
63 Dodge Dodger.
Right. Okay. So a contestant is allowed to pick a door. Which door would you like, contestant?
I'll take door number two.
No, someone already has that one. So, let's make it simple. Why don't you take door number one?
I'll take door A. All right.
So you take door number one, and then I'm Monty Hall. I say, look, you've chosen door one. We don't know what's behind door one. It could be something great. Could be that new Chevrolet.
Right.
Right?
So there's a great prize only behind one of the doors.
Right, and the other two doors have zonks, as they're called.
Yeah.
So Monty Hall knows, even if you've picked a zonk, even if door number one is 67 bags of peanuts,
right,
one of the other two doors
is also
a zonk. So he says to you, how would you like what's behind door number two? And you say, no, I don't want to change.
Because I picked door number one, and I'm sticking with it.
He says, well, door number two might be it. And you say, no. He says, well, how about door number three? There could be a great prize behind
there. No. I'm sticking
with
door number
one. And you know that your odds don't improve one iota by changing, right? They're lousy to start, and they're going to stay lousy if you switch.
Sure.
He says, I'll tell you what. I'm going to show you what's behind door number, and he picks number three, because he knows that's the other zonk.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And he shows you the 68 boxes of peanuts or Eskimo pies or whatever. You got it?
And he says, boy, aren't you glad you didn't choose that one?
Right. Right.
Yeah. And you say, great, I'm sticking with number one.
Right.
Good for me.
And he says, now you know what's behind door number three. It's the family size Preparation H lifetime supply. Would you like to take door number two?
Ooh. Mm. No, it gets dicey, as we say.
So half the audience is saying, no, you knucklehead, don't switch. You can't possibly
take door number two.
And the question is, what do you do? Now, when we first had this puzzler on the show, we had hundreds, literally hundreds of people that wrote in with one answer and hundreds of people that wrote in with the other answer. And some very learned, intelligent people, mathematics professors from universities throughout the land, throughout this great land of ours.
Yes.
Wrote in with the wrong answer.
Yeah.
And the answer is, you should switch.
Impossible.
And I'll explain it as simply as I can.
Yeah.
When you pick door number one, what he's essentially saying to you after he shows you the other zonk is, would you like to keep the door you've chosen, or would you like these other two? That's as simple as I can possibly make it. Isn't that a simple explanation? Because what he's showing you, of the two doors that remain, okay, if one of them's good, he always has to show you the zonk.
Correct.
Okay? So if you decide to switch at that point, you've already eliminated the chance of picking the other zonk because he's picked it for you. So when he offers, if he said to you, would you like door number one? And I'm not going to show you what's behind door three. There are two other doors left. Would you like to keep the one you have, or would you like to take the other two? What would you do?
I would take the other two.
I'd keep the one I had. Of course you'd take the other two.
Sure.
Right? But most
since he eliminated one of them, that's so what? He's still giving you two chances out of one, out of three, instead of the one chance out of three.
Your chances
that you
actually
had before.
Double. Your chances actually double. And if you do it, and we did it one night with three walnut shells and my wife's diamond ring, which we happened to lose in the process, but we did manage to prove the point that, in fact, if you do this enough times, by switching, you will win twice as many times as if you don't switch.
Yes, and we had some more extensive tests done by listeners who, in fact, did computer simulations.
We didn't have a computer at the time, so we used the walnut shells and the diamond ring.
And what it shows is, in the long run, if you do this, you will end up winning twice as often as you win if you don't switch.
Do we have a winner that won once as often?
Jeez, let me see.
Yes.
No kidding. I thought he was dead. The winner is Robert Burns from Memphis, Tennessee. Robert Burns. I love that. Robert Burns.
Well, you got to roll that first out. Robert.
Robert Burns. From Memphis, Tennessee. And for being selected as our winner, Robert Burns from Memphis, Tennessee, you will get a lifetime supply of Eskimo pies and a family-sized tube of Preparation H.
No, that's not true.
No, no, no. He's going to win either an autographed copy of a mediocre book, Car Talk, or one of our brand new purple Car Talk baseball hats with the greasy fingerprints factory installed on the visor. Good luck to you, Robert Burns.
Good work.
From Memphis, Tennessee.
Good work, Robert Burns. Anyway, if you'd like to call us, the number is 1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Jennifer Zizzo calling from Germany, originally from Chicago.
Jennifer Zizzo?
You're in Germany as we speak?
Yeah, I'm in Germany as we speak, Illesheim, Germany.
No kidding.
No kidding.
Wow, the call is nice and clear.
I have a brake problem. I've resorted to using the hills here instead of the brakes to stop my car.
Oh, that bad, huh?
Oh.
Yeah.
You run off the side of the road up a hill until it slows down.
Well, sure, you just coast.
Yeah.
So what's the problem?
What kind of a car is it?
I have a 1985 Toyota Corolla, front-wheel drive, standard. Mm-hmm. And for the past year since we purchased it, I noticed that the brakes seem to grip. When we're in either Austria or Switzerland skiing in the mountains, you notice the brakes are gripping, and they're not really, when you're on a hill and a slope, you're not rolling anywhere. You're always just gripped, even if you're
in other words, the brakes are binding up.
In other words, you can't get the brakes to come off. They're always on.
It doesn't seem like they come off. I mean, it wasn't dramatic until recently.
Yeah.
Early November, I took it to the base, to this do-it-yourself jobby thing that I would never do it myself.
Yeah.
Are you in the Army or your husband's in the Army?
Yes, he's a pilot. I'm also in the military. I'm a legal beagle.
My brother used to be a pilot in a bakery, you know. He'd take the bread from one corner and pilot the I'm sorry.
You're a legal beagle.
Legal beagle.
Yeah, good. Yeah, so you took it to the do-it-yourself shop.
Right, and I asked one of the guys there to do it, and he replaced the brake pads in early November. A few months later, late February, it happened again. The brake pads seemed to need to be replaced again.
Yes.
When he checked it out, he said, well, your brake pads are getting worn because you need a caliper. You know, I need to rebuild your front right caliper.
Getting better.
He's closing in on it.
It goes on. I called a bunch of German places. They don't even call the caliper a caliper. They call it some other Brunsenhammen or something.
Oh, yeah, the Brunsenhammen, yeah.
So I looked for a caliper rebuild kit. They didn't have it. We went to the States in March. I purchased one. My father got me a caliper rebuild kit. This guy on the base was going to rebuild the front right only, so that seemed kind of fishy to me, because when you do brakes,
sure,
you can do both sides.
No, you could do just one. I mean, that would be okay.
Yeah, but if you're traveling 4,000 miles to get the parts, you might as well get the parts for two.
Hey, right, what if he screwed it up? Yeah. What if he broke one of the seals or something?
Yeah.
And he's up. Sorry.
All right, so are you back?
Yes.
And you have just one kit.
And I paid him $65 to put on the pads and the front right and to rebuild the front right caliper. Yeah.
Which he did.
Excuse me?
He did that already.
Yes, he did it. I took the car home, thought it was great, zooming down the Autobahn, no speed limits whatsoever.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I exited the Autobahn, and I felt like the brakes were applied. I mean, I was shifting from first to second gear, and the car would stop, and it would putt.
Hey.
Like the brakes were fully on.
Yeah.
Both of the wheels were steaming hot. I poured water on them, steaming hot.
Oh.
Smoke, everything.
Yeah, you know what you need? You need what's called a power brake and booster. I think that's what's wrong with your car.
Really?
Yeah, the power brake booster is probably at fault. It's probably applying the brakes when you're not stepping on the pedal.
Okay.
It's either that or the brake master cylinder, one of those two things.
Master cylinder. Yeah. I've taken it everywhere. I mean, even this German guy tried to look at it twice. I mean, the language barrier is hard enough. So my girlfriend from West Point, I mean, I really have a lot of respect for this one. She tells me to take it to a master mechanic here in one of these chief warrant officers here in Germany. So I'm taking it to him, and I'm really hoping that he can help me. But I wanted you guys to suggest some things that I can tell this gentleman, because
yeah,
you guys...
Well, I mean, the first guy had his heart in the right place, but maybe his brain wasn't in the right place. Because, I mean, he immediately started fixing things without stopping to figure out what was wrong with the car.
Right.
Yeah, well, I'm sure... By the way, do they still call that thing the hobby shop?
They call it the craft shop.
A craft shop. Isn't that cute? No, here's what you need to do. Take it to this master mechanic or whomever and tell him that what he wants to do is inspect the brake master cylinder and the booster. And one of the easiest ways to isolate which one it is when you have the car in the lockup mode. In other words, when you can't drive it, when the brakes are on,
mm-hmm.
you want him to unbolt the master cylinder from the booster.
Okay.
There are two little leave all the brake lines hooked up, but unbolt it. If all of a sudden unbolting this allows you to roll the car back and forth, then it's the booster that's the culprit.
I see.
If it's still seized, you've now essentially removed the booster from the picture, the power brake booster, and if the car still won't roll, then it's the master cylinder that's the culprit.
Okay.
Isn't that simple?
Would that be the remedy if the car was, it hasn't been dragging or stopping anymore. It's been just getting really, really hot.
Yeah, well, it's getting really hot because the brakes are on all the time. It's like riding with your foot resting on the brake pedal.
Right.
There's something wrong. They shouldn't get hot.
Okay.
Yeah, that's bad because eventually the brake fluid will boil. And you'll step on the brakes someday, and you'll have lost your brakes.
Yeah.
So get this fixed as soon as you can.
With them. I mean, I don't drive with the brakes anymore. I just kind of coast.
Yeah, well, you don't have to drive with the brakes. It's doing it for you.
Right.
It's driving it for you. Get it fixed, Jennifer, soon.
Okay.
Before you go down any hills. Good luck.
Thanks.
Thanks for your call. Bye-bye.
Germany, that's good. We have calls from Germany. That's our first international call, is it not?
It is. No, we've had calls from Canada. Well, Canada's part of America.
Canada is international? There's no ocean between us and Canada.
Oh, you have to have an ocean to make it?
Absolutely.
And didn't we get a call from Scotland? What, from Robert Burns? We'll be right back with more calls and the new puzzler after these messages. We're back. You're listening to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're here to answer your questions about cars and car repair and Le Sac. La Sac must be La Sac du Gaz.
Well,
I'm not up on my French these days.
Here's this letter from Farron Broder, addressed to Gullible Mechanics, Puzzler Tower, Dear Gullibles.
That must be us, huh?
That's us. After extensive research in the Encyclopedia Britannica, it is my sad duty to inform you that in neither of those authoritative sources did I find any reference to the bizarre fate of Lavoisier. You remember when we talked about Lavoisier, first of all, we talked about the whoopee cushion and the fact that he was beheaded.
Du Gaz, and he was guillotined by Robespierre.
Is it possible that the listener who attributed Lavoisier's execution to an injudiciously placed whoopee cushion may have been pulling one of your lower appendages? I tried to trace the story both ways, from Lavoisier to the whoopee cushion and from the whoopee cushion to Lavoisier, and I found no connection. In fact, I couldn't find the whoopee cushion at all. If your crack team of indefatigable researchers finds themselves with time on their hands, it should be its. It might want to go a bit deeper into this apparently little-known scandal in the history of both science and the French Revolution.
Well, we will appeal to all of our erudite listeners, or both of our erudite listeners.
Yeah, this is important.
That have an historical bent, so to speak, I believe, now, of course, you can't trust what I say because I thought they'd move the Alamo, but I believe that Lavoisier was... Not only the inventor of the balloon, which, of course, we call the sac du gaz.
Or the whoopee cushion. It's the same thing.
Same thing.
Yeah.
But he was also guillotined shortly after the French Revolution.
Yeah. I mean, I'm shocked that the Encyclopedia Britannica doesn't have it.
There are a lot of holes in the Encyclopedia Britannica. And I happen
black
to know
holes?
Because I own the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Yes. And you look up certain things and they're not there.
Voila!
Lavoisier! They're not there.
1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello.
Hi, who's this?
This is Neely Owen from Emporia, Virginia.
Neely with two E's?
Yes, that's right.
N-E-E-L-Y.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's an unusual name.
And where are you from?
I'm from Emporia, Virginia.
Emporia. Must be a big store there, huh?
A lot of them.
Must be a lot of big stores.
What's up, Neely?
I own a 1986 Suburban.
And yeah.
I've got a problem with a sound that's fairly rude.
Can I make the sound? And you, not that I'm proficient in making rude sounds, but I'm going to make what I think may be the sound.
All right.
You think that's rude? I don't think that's it, because that's not rude. Neely wouldn't call that rude.
No, that's close, but it's not the same thing.
Yeah, what is it?
Well, it comes from the back of the car, and it's sort of like a very flatulent sound. It sort of sounds like boot.
I've had flatulence in my day, and I've never had flatulence like that. Did you do that again?
It does. It sort of goes boot.
Under what conditions? Under what conditions does it do this?
Well, it's usually during the summertime. We've got two air conditioners in the car.
Yeah.
A front one and a back one. And it doesn't start making the sounds until after the air conditioners have been in use for a while, maybe a week or two. And then it is no telling when it'll happen. The air conditioners don't have to be on. And you can be riding down the road, and all of a sudden these sounds will start happening.
So it does it continuously?
Well, no, sort of. It's intermittently.
Intermittently, but it will do it more than once. When you're accelerating, decelerating, going at a constant speed?
Cruising.
Mm-hmm. And it just suddenly goes...
Yeah, it's really kind of disconcerting.
Maybe it's the diet.
Well, I didn't know whether to call an exorcist or an internist.
Have you had anyone look at this? Have you taken it to the shop? And...
Well, I can't get it to reproduce.
Yeah.
When I'm at a mechanic.
At will, I know.
It's just sort of at its own will.
Does it sound like it's coming out from outside the car or inside?
It sounds sort of internal, like it's in the walls of the vehicle.
In the walls.
But back at the back towards where the air conditioner is.
Right, well, you don't have, I mean, you say you have two air conditioners.
Right, back where the rear air conditioner is.
Yeah, you don't have another air conditioner in the rear.
Well, back where
that is. What you have back there is, you have another evaporator and you have another blower.
Right.
But you don't have another compressor. You don't have one compressor. And you don't notice any smells associated with this flatulence, do you?
No.
But you can drive this thing for days and days on end without using the air conditioner and still get the noise.
Yeah, occasionally it just sort of all of a sudden happened. The air conditioners are not necessarily on.
So it has to be in warm weather.
It doesn't happen in the winter.
The winter when you're using heat.
It doesn't happen?
It does not happen during the winter.
Okay. I don't think it has anything to do with the air conditioning.
I don't either, but I think it has to do with the weather.
I think it has to do with the warm weather. And I think it has something to do perhaps with the fuel system.
Oh, really?
Ooh, I like it. I like it.
Yeah, I don't know what yet. I'm working on that, but it's
pressure in the gas tank.
It could be pressure in the gas tank.
Pressure in the gas tank. Gas cap. A loose or worn gas cap.
Could be.
Builds up pressure, and every once in a while, when it gets to enough pressure, it releases it in a very flatulent manner, you might think.
That gas cap gasket would kind of flap around a little bit, you know.
Sure.
And make that same kind of...
I do like it.
Like blowing across a comb with a piece of tissue paper on it.
So it sounds like he's got problems with gas.
It sounds like...
You were right in the first place, all the time. I mean, what I would do is, just for the heck of it, go to the dealer and buy a new gas cap.
This has happened ever since we've owned the car. From the very beginning, we bought it new, and it's happened ever since.
It's entirely possible that you've had a faulty gas cap from day one.
And yeah.
You haven't replaced it ever, right?
Well, look, it's cheap enough to try the experiment. Buy a new gas cap, and if we got air conditioning weather coming along. If it goes away, that doesn't explain the weather-related thing, though.
Well, sure, because the pressure in the tank builds up in warmer weather. It's hotter. The gas expands.
That's true.
I like it.
I do like it.
I like it.
It's excellent.
It's about as good as you're going to get from us today.
Actually, I mean, if it does work, drop us a note and tell us, will you?
certainly.
Yeah, because
this is the most far-fetched reason we've ever come up with for anything.
It sounds like it, and I listen to you guys faithfully, and I agree it's the most far-fetched you've ever come up with.
Well, you never know, it may work. Good luck.
Thanks so much.
Not really.
Nice talking to you.
Bye-bye. Well, another hour of your precious youth has been wasted listening to Car Talk. Our producer is Doug Lavoisier, Sac du Gaz Berman. Our associate producer and dean of the College of Auto Musicology is Ken Babyface Rogers. Our engineer and assistant producer is Jennifer Jiffy Loeb. And our technical advisor is the 40-year and 4-week-old John Bugsy Lawler. How long are we going to keep this up? Well, I guess Mom said, huh?
She told us that we
can't
should.
Call him Sweet Cheeks.
Mom said, don't call him Sweet Cheeks. He's a very handsome fellow. She calls that handsome. That's why she likes us. No taste at all.
Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research. Our automotive medical researcher is Dr. Denton Fender. Our communications director is George Stantopoulos. Our secretary of pain relief is Les Aspirin. And our director of programming is Sumner Reruns.
New man.
Our staff disciplinarian.
Sumner, how long have you been with us, boy?
Our staff disciplinarian is Les Stern. Our director of long-range strategic planning is Kay Sarah, who, of course, is married to Frank Sarah. And now her driver's license says Kay Sarah, Sarah.
And if you squeeze the driver's license, it actually goes, Kay Sarah,
our staff geneticist is Dr. Gene Poole. Our transportation coordinator is Rick Shaw, the manager of the Tappet Brothers. Capital Depreciation Fund is Les Ismore. He's in jail now. The chairman of our math department is Horatio Algebra. Mr. Gigi does our hair. And last and least, our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the other bums in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. Thanks for listening, and don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother.
See you next week. Bye-bye.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And although even our mother says it sounds funny when we say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.